Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, saṅghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, dutiyampi saṅghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi, tatiyampi saṅghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. So nice to see everybody here today. And was just telling everybody, some of the people before it started, that I was actually really excited today, because yesterday, I think, or a couple days ago or something, I created my very first Facebook account, or the first active Facebook account. So when Facebook first came out, I thought that I didn't want to join it. So that was even as a layperson. So I'd never actually been on Facebook and was pretty excited to try it out. And I was just saying to some of the people earlier that, you know, I was thinking, oh, it's going to take, you know, 6 months to have, I don't know anybody on Facebook. How am I going to have any Facebook friends? But it's amazing within, you know, a few hours, people you don't even know sometimes ask to be your friend and you're like, okay, you know. I remember being at school as a little kid, you know, you take a while to make a friend, you know, but it seems like seems that it's not so, you know, it comes a bit quicker on Facebook, which is nice. And so this is an interesting thing because, you know, as new technologies come along, as new ways of communicating come along, then as a monk, you have to kind of decide, you know, whether or not you're going to adopt this means of communicating, you're going to adopt this means of technology, or whether or not you're going to leave it be. Yeah. So it's not the case that every form of new technology that comes along, every form of new opportunity that comes along is something that, you know, you just want to jump into with both feet as a monk. So, for example, I don't have Netflix. I think that's a big thing right now. Yeah. But it does seem that increasingly this is a way people communicate through kind of Facebook, and I guess Instagram. So I'm thinking to open an Instagram account. And I don't know what else is out there. But this is the thing that Buddhism has been around for 2,500 years, and interestingly enough, at the time of the Buddha, they didn't even use writing for communication. So writing was seen as like something kind of low, and really important messages were to be memorized. And actually, the whole Buddhist canon wasn't even written down until the 4th century AD. Before that, monks and nuns would memorize the entire canon and carry it around in their heads. But actually, then it got transmitted to Sri Lanka in the time of King Asoka and was there. And there was invasions, I think, from the south, from India. And there was a danger that the whole canon would be lost. So at that point, despite 800 or 900 years of tradition, the monks decided to write the canon down. And this is one of the reasons, probably, that we have the teachings of the Buddha preserved today. These monks decided to write it down. And so actually, I ordained in a Thai tradition, but I think throughout the Theravada world, Buddhist monks are grateful to the Sri Lankan monks who wrote the canon down. Because otherwise, we probably wouldn't have it today. And so in the same way, you know, you don't know. Facebook first came out, you hear all these stories, okay. People are spending, you know, like 8 hours a day, or I don't know, three, four hours on Facebook, liking various movies and giving thumbs up to things. And, you know, as a monk, you think, okay, that's probably not a medium that I should be engaged in, you know? But then as time goes on, if things change, if Facebook, say, becomes the standard by which people communicate, the standard by which people connect, then you have to decide for yourself, you know, is this going to be a legitimate means of just communicating with people? And so this brings up an important principle in Buddhist practice, and one of the reasons why Buddhism has been able to, I guess, survive for so long, survive for 2,500 years with a monastic code. Actually, the monastic code hasn't changed for 2,500 years. The rules that monks follow now are still the same rules that they followed in the time of the Buddha. And even every fortnight, every month, in many monasteries, monks will get together and they will recite these rules from memory. It takes about 50 minutes. But one of the things, the brilliance of the Buddha's teaching, the brilliance of the way his way is setting this out, is that there are certain gray areas which you don't cross, or certain black areas which you don't cross, ever, even for the sake of your life. And then there's other areas where it starts to get a bit gray. And in these gray areas, we have to use what's called our powers of discernment, or our powers of wisdom. So life is made up of these two types of situations quite often. There are situations that we have, principles that we have, where even for the sake of our life, we shouldn't cross them. But then those ones can actually be quite tricky, because to successfully emerge from situations with these principles intact, sometimes we have to be very determined. And then there's other situations as well where it's not easy to just lay down a hard and fast rule. These kind of gray areas in life. You know, where does this exactly fall? And there's no formula for us, you know? There's no formula in those situations where we can take and say, okay, the Buddha said in this situation, do step A exactly, step B exactly, step C exactly, and step D will always be the result. Yeah. Actually, we know this for ourselves in our life. The factors that go into a situation can be so different. Each day can be so different. Each moment can be so different. And so this is why we have to try to use what's called our powers of discernment. Our powers of, we might call in the West, it's a kind of intelligence, kind of wisdom. And so for this, it helps to have these principles so that we know what we're working by. So, for example, am I going to use Facebook or not? Well, what are we going to use it for? So if this is something that people now communicate with, and it's a means by which we can communicate the Dhamma through, then we can learn to set appropriate limits in that. Okay, I'll use Facebook, but I won't use Facebook to be commenting on my friends' photos at their parties. As a monk, you wouldn't do that. I get, you know, if you get other people who are not monks probably have parties, and I mean, I'm not saying that's immoral, but as a monk, you know, that would be something that would probably be a legitimate area not to cross into. But what's the principle behind that? So we think to ourselves, what are these principles that I'm living my life by? What are these principles that are guiding me? And then when we have these principles that we live our life by, we get into a situation. We have something to provide us some sort of framework to make decisions. Some sort of framework to try to find the right way in a given situation. So, you know, you notice this often. I think last week I was talking a bit about staying with the senior monks, and how if you stay with a senior monk, they don't just necessarily let you get away with trying to follow step A, step B, step C, step D. Actually, there was a famous teacher named Ajahn Chah, and he was very famous for frustrating his students. He put them in these kind of situations where if they didn't use their ingenuity, they weren't going to find a way out. So one of them that I heard about was there was one monk, and he was coming back from alms round. And so monks, we have these bowls, and we walk around with them in the morning, And in Sri Lanka, people would know what we're doing, but here people think we're going for exercise. But we're actually out to collect food. That's traditionally how monks get their food, and then they go back to the forest and they practice. But this monk in Thailand, he was out with the other monks, and they were going to the village, and they went on alms round, and they were coming back from the village. And oftentimes, after you finish your alms round, the monks will break sometimes. Sometimes they'll go ahead very quickly, alone, back to the monastery. And other times, they'll kind of break into little groups. Sometimes one monk will end up walking beside another one, and they'll start to talk. So this particular monk was walking back to the monastery, and this other monk started to talk to him. And at least if I remember this right, and he started to insult the other monks in the monastery. Be like, this monk is no good, this monk's a bad monk, you know. And this monk who was talking to him, he liked all these monks who who the one monk was insulting. Excuse me. So as this monk's talking, he found himself getting more and more angry. You know, kind of this, what's this monk saying this for? You know, these are good monks. These aren't bad monks. Why is he insulting them? You know? So he's walking back to the monastery, and eventually they reach the monastery, and guess they go their separate ways. And then in the monastery, he sees Ajahn Chah walking towards him. And Ajahn Chah actually only knew a few words of English. He didn't know many words of English. And as Ajahn Chah was walking towards him, he looked at him and gave him a big smile. And he said, "Good morning." And as he smiled at this monk and said good morning, this monk's mind lit up. And he felt very, very happy. Kind of, Ajahn Chah said good morning to me. In a monastery like this, often you have a great deal of reverence and respect for the senior monk. And sometimes there'll be at that monastery, Ajahn Chah is a very famous monk. He would have 80 monks often living with him, 80. So it's actually quite a number. Before. So if he spoke to you, especially in English, it was something very special. And so this monk was going through the rest of the day feeling very, very happy, you know, just very, very light, very at ease. Ajahn Chah spoke to me, Ajahn Chah spoke to me in English. And so then it got even better, because as time for evening chanting came around, he went to Ajahn Chah's hut, and all these monks were giving Ajahn Chah foot massage, which you often do in the Thai tradition. You often give the senior monk kind of a massage. Sometimes at the end of the night, sometimes before, and he'll usually tell you stories. And so he joined in, I guess, and was giving Ajahn Chah a foot massage or a massage, and then Ajahn Chah told all the other monks to leave, I think. And so the other monks were gone, and Ajahn Chah's hut, or his kuti, was very close to the sala, kind of like this vihara. And so all the other monks went to the vihara, and they were chanting. And so then this monk is kind of feeling like he's in monk heaven, you know? He's kind of massaging Ajahn Chah's foot. You know, he's listening to the chanting. It's like, it can't get much better than this. You know, so he's massaging. And then, out of nowhere, he's massaging, he's having thoughts, this is great, this is amazing. Ajahn Chah kicks him in the chest. And I think he might have kicked him so hard that he hit the wall. And then he said to him, that one monk, when he was insulting those other monks, you got really angry. And then when I said hello to you, your mind totally changed. You got really happy. And he said, don't let your mind be swayed by external things like this. You have to watch out. Make your mind kind of equanimous. And that monk said that if Ajahn Chah hadn't taught him the lesson in that way, he probably never would have remembered it. Probably never would have stuck in his head. But this is one of the things that you can get from staying with really skilled senior monks like this. You know, they teach you how to use your own discernment. How to, in different situations, watch out, because you never know what kind of thing they're going to ask you. So if we don't have an opportunity like this to stay with a senior monk like this, then this is one of the things that we have to learn to do for ourselves. We have to learn to use these powers of discernment for ourselves. So what this means is noticing. When we're going off too far to the left, we have to kind of determine, we have to learn in our own minds to determine, to figure out when we're about to fall into a ditch. We're going to the left, to the left, to the left, to the left. Are we about to go into the ditch? I know that on the road sometimes they have these kind of rumble strips. You know, when you're falling asleep, you're about to veer off over the barrier, you hit this rumble strip and it rumbles and wakes you up. So we have to learn how to do this for ourselves in our own minds. We have to learn to develop our own kind of mental rumble strips, you know? What does the terrain in our mind look like when we're veering too far off in one direction and we're about to fall into the ditch? Have we been there before? What are our moods like at that time? What are our thoughts like at that time? And then, if we notice this, then we learn to create our own rumble strip. So that we notice ourselves starting to go off in this direction, that's no good, this is the way to the ditch, we stop ourselves. How do we correct ourselves in that? And this all requires this aspect of discernment, this aspect of ingenuity, this aspect of intelligence, this aspect of wisdom. And it's something that we can learn to a certain extent by staying with teachers, but it's not something we can learn necessarily from a book. At the end of the day, it's something that we have to learn for ourselves, by teaching ourselves, by watching our own mind. So the liberating thing about the Buddha's teachings is that this is something that's possible for us to do. We don't have to remain trapped in the same habits that we've had, in the same mind states that we've had. We have the capacity to develop. We have the capacity to notice. Am I going off? Am I going better? Am I going to the center of the road? Am I going forwards? Am I going backwards? Just like driving down a road. I remember when I was young and first started driving. I was in the parking lot at my mother's house. And I noticed when everybody used to drive, they used to like turn really fast. So for some reason in my head, I had it in, you know, okay, no problem. I'll just, you know, do a little wheelie here and I'll be at the parking lot. And I pulled the car out and I turned it and it crumpled this guy's wheel well. And I was on my grandfather's insurance at that time, so maybe his insurance went up. But in any event, after that, you can believe that I started to notice how close I was to cars. And started to be very careful about how I turned when I pulled out. And after that accident, I didn't end up hitting another car again. Because I noticed the signs. I learned from that mistake. When am I getting too close to the other car? These kind of danger signals seem to pop up when you get really close. You're like, oh, this happened in the past. I don't want it to happen in the future. And so this is the gift of discernment. Sometimes we think to ourselves that we're fixed in our abilities. You know, we're fixed in our personalities. We're fixed in our habits. We don't have the capacity to change these things. But actually, the opposite is true. There is no telling how far that we can go using this capacity of discernment, using this capacity of ingenuity, using this capacity of observation. We can learn to bring our minds to more peaceful states. We can learn to get good at bringing our mind to states of peace. We can learn to practice happiness. We can learn to become skilled in happiness. And this all comes from doing some of these simple things that we do over and over again in meditation, or part of it comes from that. Learning to bring our mind back to the breath. When we bring our mind back to the breath and thoughts pull us out, how do we learn to get it back there again? How do we learn to keep it there? All these skills carry over into our daily life. All these skills carry over into learning to recognize when we're on the rumble strip, learning to recognize when we're in the center of the highway and going fast, going well, learning to recognize when we're making a right turn towards our destination, learning to recognize when we're making a wrong turn towards our destination. So this is when we practice this, when we just go back to our breath again and again, we're developing this discernment because the landscape of the mind isn't always the same. The very same things that try to pull us away from the breath, try to pull us away from our meditation, are the same things that try to pull us off the road and into the ditch. The same kind of thoughts, the same kind of temptations, the same kind of desires that pull us away from our breath are the same ones that, when we follow them often, take us over the rumble strip. So this is why it's good to have this practice of meditation, to keep going back to the breath again and again, so that we can learn to become skilled in the breath. We can learn to become skilled in the mind. We can learn to become skilled in discernment. We can learn to become skilled in wisdom. We become skilled navigators in the landscape of our mind, so that we can reach our destination on time and safely, so that we can learn to become skilled in happiness. Okay, so I think I'll leave those thoughts for your reflection.